Welcome back to the U.S. Naval History Podcast. Since the last Red Sea update, U.S. forces, joined by those of the United Kingdom, have carried out a pretty continuous drumbeat of strikes on Houthi targets in Yemen, beginning on January 11th. Unfortunately, in the words of President Biden,
"Well, when you say working, are they stopping the Houthis? No. Are they going to continue? Yes."
In the meantime, while we wait for the strikes to work, I guess, the Houthis are continuing to launch anti-ship missiles at merchant shipping in the southern Red Sea and in the Gulf of Aden. We are playing an escalating game of tit-for-tat with the Houthis. We don't really want to launch an all-out air war against them because that would risk drawing in Iran. And obviously, we could win that fight if it came down to it. But if the goal is to open the sea lanes, a war zone is the opposite of that, and a war zone pretty definitively closes a sea lane off. So that would be a bit of an own goal in that regard. In the meantime, two U.S. Navy SEALs remain missing and are presumed dead after going in the water on January 12th during a search and seizure operation in which Houthi weapons were found on a vessel in the Arabian Sea, presumably coming from Iran. The weapons seized included warheads and propulsion and guidance units for medium-range ballistic missiles and anti-ship cruise missiles, so basically the Iranians supplying the Houthis with the tools they need to go interdict more shipping and attack more shipping. And then on the 14th, the Houthis fired an anti-ship cruise missile in the direction of the USS Laboon. That cruise missile was shot down by a fighter before it could cause damage. And then on the 16th, we, the United States, launched an air raid which destroyed four Houthi anti-ship ballistic missiles as they were being prepared to target ships in the Red Sea. And then that was followed up on the 15th by a fourth round of U.S. strikes that destroyed 14 Houthi missiles across Houthi-controlled territory. Over the next week, there were at least four more strikes for a total of eight, but as we'll see, that hasn't exactly stopped the Houthis from targeting ships transiting the Red Sea, and so I expect the drumbeat of strikes every day or two to continue until someone comes up with a more coherent strategy. If you have any ideas, send them my way, because I don't know what I would do in this situation. It's a problem. On the more comical side, on January 24th, Houthis claimed to have attacked and sunk a U.S. Navy destroyer with a missile, so that's not true. The net effect of all this situation is that the Houthis are disrupting merchant shipping in the southern end of the Red Sea and in the Gulf of Aden. It's been all over the news in the past month or so. The main effect is that traffic going through the Suez Canal, which is a shortcut between the Indian Ocean and the Mediterranean Sea, and the primary seaborne trade conduit between Asia and Europe, has been severely curtailed. There are multiple angles to the situation which continue to evolve, but what we're looking at right now is a situation following Navy strikes, and that situation has not really improved in terms of commercial shipping. We're seeing a ton more shipping companies pulling the plug on this region. We're seeing LNG tankers and other tankers divert around the Horn of Africa, so around the southern tip of Africa. And we're seeing coordinated attacks on bulk ships right now, including U.S.-owned bulk ships. And so as these attacks continue, and the first merchant ships are being struck by Houthi missiles, we're seeing more and more shipping companies make that decision to divert around that southern tip of Africa, the Horn of Africa, and fewer vessels going through the Suez Canal, which means Egypt is going to lose something on the order of $5+ billion this year in transit fees, which, to quote Reuters, has struck a painful new blow to Egypt's already deteriorating economy. But far more importantly, if you're not Egyptian, when shipped around the southern tip of Africa to avoid the Houthi attack zones, this adds about 5,500 miles of sailing distance, causes a ton more ship emissions if that's something you care about, and jacks up the shipping prices dramatically. And unfortunately, while the military has done a mostly effective job in neutralizing Houthi missile attacks, the Navy just can't control market forces. As I was writing this episode script over the past day or two, more attacks were getting through. First, there was a suicide drone that did very little damage when it hit the U.S.-owned Genco Picardy bulk carrier just a few hours after President Biden put the Houthis on a terrorist watch list. And then on the 26th, a British oil tanker, Marlin Luanda, in the Gulf of Aden, caught fire after a missile attack by the Houthis. There's some good footage of firefighting by the crew, and the fire appears to be out now after a multi-hour blaze. But the Marlin also appears to be listing, so she probably suffered more damage than previous civilian ships when a Houthi attack got through. For the shipping industry, the loss of a ship and a cargo are catastrophic. There is just so much money involved in a modern ship and cargo. And so 99.99% of all ships are heavily insured. There are different types of insurance, but you know, the quote normal insurance does not cover intentional hostile damage. And so shipping companies have to purchase a separate war insurance policy, which is designed to protect ships against accidental damage caused by a hostile third party in the event of war, civil war, revolution, rebellion, insurrection, Houthi attack, etc. And normally, since the risk of war and hostile action against a civilian ship is pretty darn low, war insurance rates hover around a few hundredths of a percent of the value of ship and cargo. But now they're up many, many, many fold, hovering around 1%. And that puts war insurance totally out of viable financial reach for really valuable cargo ships, like a container ship full of the latest and greatest flat screen TVs and whatnot coming from China, and for LNG, that's liquefied natural gas, tankers to go through. They could easily have $100 million, $200 million worth of cargo, depending on exactly how big they are and the current market price of what they're carrying. 1% of hundreds of millions of dollars equals cheaper to go around the Horn of Africa. And so while we're mostly winning the military fight, we are losing the economic fight to the Houthi right now. In terms of assets down in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden, right, on one hand, we have U.S. and U.K. destroyers doing an excellent job of shooting down drones and missiles. But on the other hand, other international allies are not particularly interested in actively working with us on Operation Prosperity Guardian, which is the operation tasked to protect shipping against the Houthis. There also hasn't been much coming from the Marine Corps, the Air Force, or the Army. This really does seem to be pretty exclusively a Navy show and a surface warfare show primarily. And as much as there is a small article on the front page of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal every few days, I just don't think that this issue is getting the attention it should. There are huge implications for Wall Street, for world trade, for supply chains. We collectively are losing billions of dollars every day that these ships are being rerouted. And there seems to be a military shipping industry disconnect. And we are learning in real time that the low-level threats we were preparing for with ship classes like the Littoral Combat Ship are not the low-level threats that we should have been preparing for. This is a very different game than Somali pirates. Despite its name, the Littoral Combat Ship class can't really even combat this ragtag group of Houthis in the littoral zone because they lack area air defense capabilities. And so I'd argue that we're experiencing a paradigm shift in the way that we need to think about the medium-term stability of world trade in a newly multipolar world. Right now, there just aren't enough of the very highly capable but very expensive destroyers which fire these very expensive missiles to protect all of these commercial ships. And hope that Congress is starting to realize this, that we do need more of these destroyers, despite the expense, because however expensive the destroyers are, they represent a very small cost compared to the billions of dollars a day that the world economy is suffering from these reroutings and disruptions of trade, to say nothing of when we emerge into a hot war at some point in the future. So why is this important to finance? Well, as a very self-interested American, America's reserve currency status is built in large part on the liquidity that world trade provides. The trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of trade worldwide is transacted primarily in U.S. dollars because U.S. dollars underpin the liquidity that gives us this reserve currency status. The world transacts in U.S. dollars in part because the U.S. dollar is secure, because the U.S. dollar is protected by ships and good policies and alliances. But now, as our alliances are showing cracks, it's not even clear that the Navy has the capacity to guarantee the frictionless flow of world trade anymore. And this means that supply chains are going to be less reliable. In lieu of this common good of open seas, we're seeing the French, the Italians, and probably more nations in the near future doing individual convoy escort missions for their nation's ships. It becomes a game of who can protect their own ships and less of what the U.S. and Britain are trying to do, which is to provide a global common good. And based on the insurance rates being quoted on the shipping market right now. We are failing to convince insurers that there is no chance a missile is going to get through and hit a ship and cause tens to hundreds of millions of dollars of damage on top of the environmental catastrophe we'd experience from a hole blown in a tanker's hull. This is a fundamentally very difficult problem to deal with. If a more standard country were taking these same actions, the response would be pretty straightforward. But the problem is, how do you exert pressure on the Houthi, who are doing this for ideological reasons, largely? Well, one solution is that we could put pressure on the Houthi sponsor, their trainer, their equipment supplier, their intelligence supplier, which is Iran. But that ratchet of sanctions and other restrictions is about as tight as it can get without bursting. You know, we can try to notch up another degree of pressure, but I have my doubts that that's going to work. And in the meantime, look at who benefits. While we are struggling to screen our ships and still getting slammed with unmanageable insurance rates, Chinese ships are sailing straight through the Suez without a care because the Chinese are cozy with the Iranians, who in turn are telling the Houthis not to touch the Chinese or Russian ships. Although, since you're working with a bunch of ragtag proxies, marching orders aren't always followed too closely, as evidenced when a Houthi missile hit, probably by accident, a ship carrying Russian petroleum products, so whoops. But meanwhile, these Chinese shipping companies are very openly loving this in their press conferences and in their financial reports. They are reaping the benefits of higher shipping rates without the higher costs Western shipping companies are suffering from taking the extra time and the fuel to divert around Africa. So despite the endless Chinese boasting over the past decade about the impending stability that the PLAN, that's the People's Liberation Army Navy, would provide to the world and how the world doesn't need the United States anymore, yada, yada, Chinese ships have been strangely absent from this global good of protecting the free flow of commerce through the Suez Canal. And the irony, though, is that even if you are a big Western commercial shipping company, you're still loving this. Obviously, in public, you talk about this is terrible, very dangerous for mariners, et cetera, et cetera. But in reality, high shipping rates equals high profits. Since it now takes an extra 10 days or so to make the Europe-Asia transit, that means that the supply of ships has effectively gone down, while demand is more or less constant. Econ 101 tells you that prices and thus profits now go up until new supply comes online. But even if new ships were ordered yesterday from a fully available shipyard, that would be 3 years from now. The shipping giants were coming into this year looking at very bleak economic forecasts, but their stocks have been on an absolute tear recently. And so what does this mean for you and me, assuming that you, like me, were not smart enough to add two and two and get buy shipping stock right now? Well, it means that we are potentially facing another supply chain disruption period, similar to what we experienced with the COVID disruptions, probably not on the same magnitude. That also puts upwards pressure on inflation, and so that's bad news in general, again, for the average Joe. But the average Joe, the average person, does not think about shipping, and really they shouldn't have to. They should have to go do their job, be a good member of society, raise their family. But our national leaders should be thinking about shipping. We have come to take for granted that shipping will always be there and it'll always be uncontested, both on the commercial and on the military side. That is one of the reasons that we have MSC Oilers and supply ships sailing around with no weapons, no air defense. We have gotten too used to thinking and assuming that logistics would go unthreatened. And now what we're learning is that we're entering a world of contested logistics. The Houthis are contesting logistics, but they're just doing it on a commercial basis. For the Navy, the lesson here, at least for me, is that it's not going to be just the Houthis in the future. There are other players that can do this. If you can get close to a supply line and a choke point, you can close off a choke point with minimal effort. Other countries are drawing the lesson that as long as there is a proxy involved, choke points are just open game. The Houthis so far haven't shown the ability to deploy mines or UUVs, unmanned underwater vehicles. But given the curve of drone technology, I wouldn't put it past the next group who try something similar in a couple of years. And just like having crappy little non-state players with decently advanced drones and missiles was a new challenge this time, the next time it's going to be something else. And all of this leaves completely unmentioned the great power war scenario. This should be a wake-up call. This should be a training run. The Houthis, the sinking Houthis, who control part of one of the poorest countries in the world, with the backing of a regional player who is careful not to push the envelope too far, is effectively blocking off the Suez Canal, which carries 12% of world trade. What happens when a great power, cough cough China, goes all out to attack its enemies? We need to start taking a much closer look at contested logistics. How are we going to get the supplies, these 7,000 miles from the West Coast to Taiwan, against a great power? We hear constantly that the Army is doing its own pivot to the Pacific, and that they are the linchpin of the Pacific, that they have plans to defend the Pacific Islands. Well, there's islands in the Red Sea. The Army historically has protected choke points. If you look at the map of the British Empire, they literally had colonies and army bases on every single maritime choke point in the Eastern Hemisphere because they were a commercial maritime power. Singapore, South Africa, Egypt, Gibraltar, the Gulf of Aden, all of them had big Royal Army presences. We also keep hearing from air power advocates saying that the Air Force can protect ships in the Pacific. Well, where are they now? The Gulf of Aden is a lot smaller than the Pacific. Historically, the Marines have been on board ships with weapon systems to protect U.S. merchant shipping in contested waters. Well, where are they now? The other services should be testing their contested logistics plans on the Houthis right now. This is a high-stakes practice run, but the burden is falling exclusively on the Navy. Anyway, that's the update. I've got a lot of criticisms, but it's always easier to poke holes in someone else's execution than execute yourself. If you have great ideas on how to do it, send me an email, usnavalhistorypodcast@gmail.com. Thank you again for listening. Leave me a rating. I'd really appreciate it. And I've got some new things coming down the pipe in the near future, so please subscribe and share with your friends and family. Until next time, fair winds and following seas.